I'm going to be telling you all about the Davis Dozen, which are a group of 11 students and one professor within the community of at the University of California, Davis, who are facing an extensive legal battle in the Yolo County District Courts for their alleged involvement in a protest action at the U.S. Bank branch on the UC Davis campus. But before sharing more details, I think it's important to situate the case of the Davis Dozen in the context of ongoing student struggles against the privatization of the UC system, particularly within the context of the university occupation movement of recent years that saw non-cooperative, anti-authoritarian building takeovers at UC campuses throughout the state, and the inevitable deployment of violent campus police by the administration to roust out the occupiers and student demonstrators. So the immediate history of the Davis Dozen case is framed by the past 2011-2012 school year, which saw some of the high points of the UC struggle unfold on the Davis campus in moments of collective direct action as well as brutal police repression. So when campus riot police were deployed by the administration on November 17th to clear the Occupy UC Davis encampment and remove demonstrators from the quad, students linked arms around their tents to defend the camp, and a number of them linked up and sat down to form a peaceful blockade between the camp and the riot police. And this amounted to a nonviolent act in defiance of the administration's attempts to squash their precarious and precious seizure of political space. For this act of civil disobedience, these seated and passively resisting students were sprayed in the face at immediate close range by police with weapons-grade pepper spray. And the video of this incident immediately went viral throughout the country and the world, sparking public outrage and providing the impetus for a powerful movement of students, workers, and faculty calling for the resignation of the UC Davis chancellor, known as Linda Pepperspray Katehi. So following this intense high-profile drama, the student activists successfully reestablished their camp and also seized and occupied Dutton Hall, which is the financial administrative hub of the university, and initiated a series of workshops and seminars under the heading of the Paulo Freire Free School. So in these open seminars, members of the UC Davis community came together to teach, learn, and discuss the panoply of issues around university privatization, including administrative expansion, escalating student debt, capital projects, and police repression. And so as students and faculty collectively developed their critiques of privatization and extended them to take account of broader systemic problems of political economy, the radical character of their actions also deepened. So January featured the seizure and occupation of the campus's empty cross-cultural center in an effort to nurture and sustain a material space for organizing resistance, and for cultivating a radical critique of privatization. And what emerged from these actions was a growing recognition and emphasis on the key role played by banks in university privatization and the student debt crisis. Right at the moment, coincidentally, that the UC Davis administration's lucrative new partnership with U.S. Bank manifested in the conversion of student ID cards into debit cards and the opening of a brand new U.S. Bank branch on the UC Davis campus. So these are the details that set the stage for the Davis Bankers Dozen case. And to explain the case, I'll quote directly from their support website, which states that on the 29th of March, weeks after an anti-privatization action against U.S. Bank ended with the closure of the bank's campus branch, 11 UC Davis students and one professor received orders to appear at Yolo County Superior Court. District Attorney Jeff Riesig is charging campus protesters with 20 counts each of obstructing movement in a public place and one count of conspiracy. If convicted, the protesters could face up to 11 years each in prison and $1 million in damages. The charges were brought at the request of the UC Davis administration, which had recently received a termination letter from U.S. Bank holding the university responsible for all costs, claiming they were constructively evicted because the university had not responded by arresting the illegal gathering. Protesters point out that the charges against them serve to position the university favorably in a potential litigation with U.S. Bank. It was only after U.S. Bank announced that it had permanently closed its doors that the UCD administration requested that the DA bring criminal charges against the 12. Supporters argue that the university is targeting the dozen in order to limit its liability to U.S. Bank, and that the university is effectively using public funds through the DA's office to protect a private corporation's right to profit from increasingly indebted students at an increasingly expensive public university. So this is from the DavisDozen.org website. And considering that the case is still pending, discussing the details any further is tricky. But the important issue at stake here is what this case says about the nature of resistance and repression, what it reveals about the prevailing status quo, namely that the banks, the police, and the courts, and the administration are merely different faces of the same side of a fundamental opposition. The opposition between those who administer and profit from capitalism and those who are exploited by it. The criminalization of dissent on university campuses is merely an extension of this basic antagonism. Capital has colonized and converted the university into an apparatus of value creation that is fundamentally predicated upon the expansion of student debt, forcing students to mortgage their futures for a trivial return of a university degree that becomes increasingly meaningless in the midst of systemic economic crisis. Meaning there simply don't exist the kinds of jobs students once would hope to get in order to cash in, so to speak, on their investment in education. So the university's administration simply exists to manage and facilitate this conversion of the university into a capitalist cash cow for financial institutions like banks, while securing its own lucrative piece of the pie. So for moments of resistance when students and faculty take direct action in defiance of this system, the police and courts exist precisely to block any meaningful action against it. They exist to protect the interests of capital and its managers. We saw that the university's first paranoid knee-jerk response was to send out its police to crush the student and faculty resistance. But after this use of a visceral and visible police force drew intense criticism, and not only nationwide, but international public denunciation, the administration falls back upon a subtler but more insidious form of stealth repression by retroactively using the court system to press frivolous charges and tangle demonstrators up in exhausting, potentially life-destroying legal proceedings, which is what's happening in the case of the Davis Dozen. So 12 individuals are being charged with 21 misdemeanor counts each for allegedly sitting in a hallway and for conspiring to sit in said hallway. So for this, they face up to 11 years of jail time and over $1 million in damages. Clearly, this has nothing to do with student safety or accessible quality education. This has to do with the administration's protection of private interests. The real object is always the same. In the times of economic crisis and austerity, this becomes increasingly clear. This case is really about the protection of a narrow triad of mutually reinforcing, mutually profiting relations between the administration, the banks, and prosecutors and police. So at the perpetual expense of students and workers. So this is the political content of the legal repression that's currently faced by the Davis Bankers Dozen. And in the name of the movement against the privatization of education, they really need our support, and they need to be defended. The sheer injustice of this case has attracted the attention of well-known social justice attorney Tony Serra, who famously represented the Black Panthers, and he's serving as pro bono counsel for the Dozen. At their last court appearance on Thursday, May 10th, the Dozen pleaded not guilty to all charges. They flatly rejected a plea deal in which they would serve 80 hours of community service. Their next court appearance is scheduled for Friday, July 13th, when they'll receive a schedule of upcoming hearings. So you can support the Dozen by attending and following their series of trial dates, by donating to their legal fund, and by publicizing and promoting their defense. This is truly an outrageous case. So visit their website at www.davisdozen.org for more information, for links to international statements of solidarity and to see a current schedule of trial dates and donate online to their WePay account for legal defense.
Okay, and this is a situation that we're going to continue to follow here on Radio Autonomía. Over the last few years, since we started our broadcasting here at Berkeley Liberation Radio, we've been doing sort of a series of reports about the sort of Occupy, what we now refer to sort of as the pre-Occupy movement around public education. So I also wanted to let our listeners know that here on Radio Autonomía, we just got this report from our newest DJ, yet to be named. We'll have a really awesome name for her next month, but we are really excited to welcome a new DJ into the collective of Radio Autonomía and bringing a lot of amazing analysis and experience into this project. So we're going to hear a quick track that was actually dedicated to the UC Davis activists in 2009, and then we will come back with one of our regular segments.
Going out like a sucker, no way. Woo!
Yeah. Yo. 2010. I love college remix. I know I'm a little late, but it's for all the college demonstrators.
Shortly after the UC Board of Regents approved a 32% increase in undergraduate student fees, students gathered inside Barack Hall while trying to engage in conversation with university representatives. At approximately 5:15 p.m., police warned students inside the building that they were subject to arrest for trespassing. Students remained in solidarity.
I recall, yo, the first day moving in. Shared a room with a white guy, crazy man. He played guitar and I told him I rap. Now he plays the bass line and his name be Zach. And we rock college parties, yo, as a new man. And I played a little golf, bitch, you didn't know that. But the coach was a racist, so I called him one. But I just read David Siren, so I was awesome. Mr. Bay were conservative assholes, and they the biggest haters, so I had to let them know. I respect all the students, man, that's sitting in, like my little cousin Juan, man, I'm so proud of him.
Tensions escalated as police established a perimeter, blockading both entrances to Black Hall. Although police continued to give multiple warnings, students responded by chanting louder. Students then unified by linking arms and forming a circle as police gave their last word.
UCDPD's been here since about 1 o'clock, and they called in all of these subsequent officers because they didn't feel they could handle the protesters, even though there hasn't been a single violent outbreak.
Check it out. The second verse dedicated to the high life. Pass the weed, but I'm talking more tuition hikes. For the ones gotta work 10 jobs to pay for the books, leave the store feeling robbed. Damn, they never showed us in the movies. People dropping like the pennies of a groupie. And even if you graduate, where you getting hired? No jobs, I'm depressed, damn, I'll be throw you fired. What you want me to say? What if I rap about tits, blunts, and getting laid? Hot girls getting faded, homie, then could I say? But then I'd be Asheroth, no way.
PM and students remain non-aggressive in their continued support for students being escorted out individually by police.
Yeah. I love college. Yeah. To all the organizers, to all the students, I see you. I got my fist raised.